The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Jim Cronin from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I shall be reading to you from the Reader's Digest. Well, last week we left off with some of the medical questions, so we still have a couple of more of those to finish up. So let's get started with that. Now remember, these are the hints of things that you should not resist. I mean, you should not ignore when you hear them, because they could be very, very serious. My nagging headache turned out to be a stroke. In 2013, LaTarsha Jones got a doozy of a headache. Jones, a mother of three, assumed her busy schedule and long hours working at an assistant principal of an elementary school were just taking their toll. The aching persisted for several weeks and was often so bad that Jones had to hold her head when she coughed or sneezed. One afternoon, the pain suddenly intensified. I felt like everything was going in slow motion. I couldn't get words out. My speech slurred. I was numb on the left side. When first responders arrived, Jones was unable to lift her left arm or say her ABCs, two tests used to determine whether a patient has suffered a stroke. At the hospital, an MRI revealed she had indeed experienced an isometric stroke, which occurs when vessels supplying blood to the brain becomes blocked. Doctors are still looking into factors that may have caused it because blood pressure was not extremely high, and other tests were borderline. I believe my obesity was the main factor, Jones says. In response to her terrifying ordeal, Jones has stepped up her activity and cleaned up her diet. Today, the 47-year-old is an American Heart Association Go Red for Women Real Woman volunteer. She is still recovering from her stroke and takes medication daily to prevent another. What else could it be? Nearly everyone gets skull throbbers. Dehydration, poor posture, certain foods and stress are common causes. But some head pain indicates a bigger issue. If a headache wakes you up in the morning or doesn't get better with medication, it might be a brain tumor. If it's coupled with a high fever and a stiff neck, you might have meningitis. Headache accompanied by blurry vision or trouble focusing could be an aneurysm. I'll tell you what, some of this stuff is kind of scary. If you're a hypochondriac, this is your kind of thing, because it really, there's a whole lot of stuff that indicates. 15 more symptoms to get checked. Muscle pain. Muscle soreness is likely normal if you pinpoint the reason, and it doesn't dissipate over time. If it doesn't, ask your doctor whether it could be arthritis, influenza, Lyme disease, lupus, fibromyalgia, polymyalgia, rheumatica, or rhabdomyolysis. Some medications can also cause muscle pain. Breathing problems. When you just can't get enough air, the reason could be bacterial infection, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, COPD, lung cancer, or COVID-19. Call your doctor if your breathing troubles come on suddenly or worsen after 30 minutes of rest. Brain fog, dementia, fibromyalgia, multiple sclerosis, menopause, or an underactive thyroid can all cause changes in concentration and memory. Some medications such as beta blockers and statins can also be the culprit. Great. Back pain. Dehydration, stress, inactivity, a poor diet, or the wrong wardrobe, high heels or too tight outfits, could be to blame for back aches. If your back hurts when you first get out of bed in the morning, the pain may be from osteoarthritis. Pain in the lower and upper back, or on your side, or in your groin, can be a sign of a urinary tract infection that has spread to the kidneys. A herniated disc can hit the nerves in your spinal cord, causing pain. Chest pain. Chest pain can be a scary red flag for a heart attack, and you should call 911 if you think you're in cardiac arrest, or if you also experience shortness of breath, cold sweats, nausea, lightheadedness, overwhelming fatigue, or a feeling of doom. But those pains in your chest could also be a sign of anemia, shingles, pancreatitis, a stomach ulcer, a panic attack, or lung cancer. If the pain gets worse when you take a deep breath, you may have costochondritis, whatever that is. Fatigue. You might blame your exhaustion on an insanely busy schedule or just feeling lazier than usual. But anemia, depression, diabetes, heart disease, and sleep apnea are other possible causes. Fever. A body temperature of 100.4 degrees Fahrenheit or above is normally a sign that your immune system is working to fight off infection, such as strep throat, influenza, or COVID-19. But if you also have abdominal pain, you might have appendicitis. Not me. Mine was taken out years ago. tenderness and swelling in your legs, deep vein thrombosis, skin that is red and painful to the touch, cellulitis, a cough, or shortness of breath, pneumonia, or bloody urine or pain when you urinate, a urinary tract infection. Heard an interesting factoid about temperatures. Once you pass the age of 60, your temperature actually drops some. So 98.6 is no longer really a baseline. A lot of people over 65, let's say, have temperatures in the mid to high 97s. So 97.4 is a perfectly normal temperature. Interesting factoid. Hearing problems. If you didn't spend last night at a rock concert and your ears are sore, it could be an ear infection, referred pain from an infection in your teeth or jaw, or temporomandibular joint, TMJ syndrome. If you're experiencing hearing loss on one side or a constant ringing sensation, tinnitus, you might have tumor on the temporal lobe, or part of the brain responsible for processing sounds and language. Some diuretics for heart disease, chemotherapies, and antibiotics can damage your ears, as could type 1 and type 2 diabetes. Nausea and vomiting. Feeling queasy is often a side effect of motion sickness, pregnancy, or gastroenteritis. Hope it's not pregnancy for me. But heart attack symptoms can also mimic stomach problems such as nausea, vomiting, or overall GI upset, especially in women. If your nausea is accompanied by pain in the upper right side of the abdomen, you may have had a gallbladder attack. If you have back pain and fever along with nausea, chances are a urinary tract infection has morphed into a full-blown kidney infection. Stomach ulcers and pancreatic cancer can also cause nausea. Rash or hives. An intensely itchy, blistering rash can be a signal celiac disease, while dark skin patches called acanthosis nigritiens are a sign of diabetes. A red, angry rash can be a symptom of leukemia. A painful rash that appears in a strip on the side of the face or body is characteristic of shingles. And if you've recently been hiking, you may have Lyme disease or Rocky Mountain spotted fever. Acne. Although most acne can be attributed to clogged pores or fluctuating hormones, blemishes can also indicate leaky gut syndrome, polycystic ovary syndrome, PCOS, or stress. Breast pain. A vast majority of women who come in with breast pain do not have the cancer, says Diane Ramos, MD, co-chair of the National Preconception Health and Healthcare Initiative. Other culprits could be pregnancy or an infection. Men who feel breast pain might have testicular cancer. Constipation and diarrhea. Going to the bathroom too much or too little can be a sign of celiac disease, Crohn's disease, irritable bowel syndrome, IBS, leaky gut syndrome, depression, or too much protein. If constipation becomes severe and persistent, it could indicate colorectal cancer. Constipation or diarrhea, accompanied by bloating or needing to urinate often, might mean ovarian cancer. NSAID pain relievers, magnesium-containing acids, and protein pump inhibitors can cause the runs, while narcotics, diuretics, iron supplements, and antacids can stop you up. Nail problems. When your nail bed is concave or spoon-shaped, you have a condition known as coelia conchia, which is usually caused by anemia. Suddenly swollen skin near the cuticles with nails that are bulbulous can be a sign of lung disease. Tiny little dents along the surface of the nails are associated with psoriasis or alopecia areata. Nails that are white with a pink and brown band at the tip are associated with kidney, liver, or heart problems. Melanoma can appear under your nails if a black spot on the nail bed or dark colored line. Brittle nails that peel or split can be caused by underactive thyroid. Ridges in nails can signal that you're not making enough stomach acid. Kidney disease. In one study, 36% of patients with chronic kidney disease had half white, half brown nails. Vision and other eye problems. Blurred vision that worsens over time may be cataracts or glaucoma. Bleeding in a retina may signal diabetes. Antihistamines, sleeping pills, anxiety pills, and some pain relievers cause eye dryness and redness by reducing tear secretion. And cancers that start in the brain or spinal cord can affect vision, while those that start in the pancreas can cause jaundice and yellowing of the whites of the eyes. Well, now, after that depressing bunch of information, let's have a quick little bit of humor in uniform. Aboard a troop carrier crossing the Atlantic, I noticed a seasick pal of mine losing it over the railing alongside several other soldiers. I knew you had such a weak. I never knew you had such a weak stomach, I said. It's not weak, he replied. I'm throwing up just as far as the rest of these guys. A life well lived. On Dad's trail forever, and there's a picture of a guy on a motorcycle tearing down the road. He taught me how to ride and all the rules of the road. Growing up in St. Petersburg, Florida, my dad had a paper route on his bicycle and then his scooter, perhaps discovering then his love of two wheels. I picture him as a teenager in his Vespa, sky blue with bloody clouds of rust, crackling and smoking across the bridges of Pineland County. The evening papers, hot from the press, are rolled like warm loaves in his leather satchel. His taillight is a red ruby with the failing darkness. 56 years later, in the fall of 2017, I left my home in Wilmington, North Carolina, on Blitzen, my 1989 Harley-Davidson Sportster, a bike my dad and I had built together, bound for New Orleans. My route would take me down the old coastal highway U.S. 17, know it well, stopping overnight at my parents' house south of Savannah, where I grew up, before heading across the Gulf Coast to New Orleans, my longest solo ride yet. I wasn't even out of time before the bike gave me trouble. A slight misfire. I called my old man. We usually spoke a few times a week. I'd been riding on the back of his Harley since I was in grade school. When I was in my teens, we'd haunted the back roads of South Georgia for places to ride our dirt bikes. Now, with me in my 30s, we were becoming closer friends than we'd ever been. Worked side by side on the Blitzer with hardly a tiff. No small feat when wrenching on a 30-year-old motorcycle. What's more, we'd begun to share a love of riding like never before. I still remember the knowing light in his eyes when I described the feeling of my first long solo ride. I'll never forget the first time he let me ride his prized 30th anniversary Harley-Davidson Wide Glide. I was 16, and we were on a country road south of the Florida line. When we stopped for gas, I pulled up next to him, overly excited, and my foot slipped on a patch of gravel, almost in slow motion. I dropped the bike, 600 pounds of Milwaukee iron. I could see the pain and frustration in his face. But instead of lashing out, he gritted his teeth and brought his emotions to heel, even as he thumbed the new dents and scratches in his once-perfect machine. "Happens to the best of us," he told me. "True. Everyone who rides a motorcycle would drop one sooner or later. Amen to that. Never done that. Still, how easy to forget in the heat of the moment. Rick Brown, my dad, didn't. I believe that's one of the great lessons I learned from him. That character often requires us to place what is right over what is easy. Back in Wilmington, after a few minutes on the phone, we decided that Blitz's misfire was only a fleck of rust or debris that made it through the fuel filter. The engine was throbbing low and steady now. Like a mechanical heart, I hit the road. On rides like these, I always avoid the interstates, just as he taught me. There's so much more to see on the back roads and byways, the roadside produce stands and junk shops, the Pentecostal churches and mom-and-pop restaurants, and gas stations that serve coffee in the tiny styrofoam cups. The best coffee in the world when you're just off your motorcycle, rain-soaked and shivering. For me, there's nothing as therapeutic as a long ride on the back road. It feels like the wind gradually blows away the nests of doubt and anxiety that gather inside us. I think on motorcycles we are uniquely vulnerable. We are perhaps closer to death, and that puts a lesser worry of everyday life back in their place. After spending the night in Charleston, I took off early the next morning, riding south over the green-bound marshes and Blackwater rivers, bound for Georgia. My old man met me in downtown Savannah. We ate lunch and went to a bookstore and sat at one of the hotel bars high over the water, watching the river traffic chug past. It was an unexpected special day, a gift, and there's a picture of the author and his father sitting on their motorcycles. In 2016. The next night, we sat side by side in the kitchen counter while we planned the next leg of my trip. I made note cards as he traced his fingers across the worn atlas he'd used time and time and again. I was taking many of the same roads he'd ridden in time past, following his path across the Gulf Coast. There are sons who want to be like their fathers and ones who don't. I've never doubted which I am. When I sung my leg over the Blitzen the next morning, our note cards were safe in my front pocket, and a plastic sandwich bag to protect them from the elements. It was October 16th, 2 days before my 35th birthday. In a photo taken that morning, I'm wearing my secondhand black leather jacket and my red backpack and my dad's old waterproof duffel is tied over the back of my saddle. The weather was foggy. I rode over the bridges and causeways of Georgia coast, where the water looked pale beneath the mist, almost white, winding through the dark and cord grass of a fall-time marsh. I rode down Highway 17 through a string of small towns, skirting the Okefenokee Swamp and the Ocala National Forest, making my way to the Panhandle. I still have note cards that tell me the towns, Folkston, McClenny, Sanderson, Lake City, Brantford, along with the trip checklist my father gave me. But such necessities are tire patch, kit pump, and ducked electrical tape, and cigars, lighter, and cutter. Around lunchtime, I stopped in Mayo, Florida, where I took photos of the Utter Delight ice cream shop. I texted with my old man. He'd ridden to a diner called Steffens to the Georgia-Florida border for lunch and sent me a photo of a die-cast 1940 Ford coupe sitting on a shelf there, a model like the bootlegging car from my novel, Gods of Howl Mountain, which he'd researched together at vintage car shows and moonshine festivals. He told me he checked the weather, and the heavier rain was staying north of my route. He said Wakulla County, Florida, my night's destination, was partly cloudy at 88 degrees. I didn't reply. I was already back on the road. When I got a call from my mom, I was at the lodge in Wakulla Springs, south of Tallahassee. I just arrived. I knew from the sound of her voice that something had happened, although tales were scarce. There had been an accident. A concrete truck had pulled out in front of my dad on his way home from the lunch on Highway 17, just north of the Florida line, the same highway I'd ridden that morning. I was at the local airport about to rent a car for the drive home, but Mom called to tell me he was gone. I found myself standing in the parking lot, staring up at the sky. It was sunset, and the sky was almost the color of fire. I thought how many times Dad had ridden south to watch the same sky turn to flame. I started out early the next morning in the rental car, leaving Blitzen under a cover in the parking lot. My sister took the red eye from San Francisco, and I picked her up at the airport on my way home. When we got there, Mom had a big vanilla envelope labeled with a single word, IYF. Inside were letters addressed to each of us. Here's a little of mine. Taylor, if you are reading this, something has happened to me. I assume it was sudden, and I didn't have the chance to say goodbye, and for that I'm truly sorry. I know this is a difficult time, but remember the good times we share. Sun and fun, Sturgis, dirt bikes, moonshiners, festival, Blitzen, Austin, and on and on. I have truly enjoyed all the time we spent together throughout your life, other than a couple times playing golf. What I want to stress in this letter is how much I love you and how proud that I am and always will be. I don't need to tell you that it takes a special kind of man to write letters like that. Although he shied away from speaking of it, his relationship with his own father had been fraught with difficulty and pain. How easy it would have been for him to follow the same pattern with his own children. Instead, he went against the grain. A week after the accident, one of my closest childhood friends drove me back to Wakulla Springs. I needed to finish the ride. I left early the next morning for New Orleans. I stopped at a gas station and realized my chain was loose. I was sitting in the parking lot trying to break the axle bolt free with an ancient crescent wrench when a man appeared. I followed him to his rusted-out Ford, and he produced a fancy snap-on ratchet set. He went inside for breakfast where there weren't even any windows to make sure I didn't run off with his tools, and told me to come find him when I was done. I can't tell you how much that meant to me. The next day I made it to my aunt's in New Orleans, where my dad always stopped on his long roads, and Blitzen broke down right in her driveway, as if the machine knew just how much it meant for me to finish the ride for him. He may have left the world too early for us, but I take some comfort in knowing he would have wanted to go soon rather than too late. Rick Brown would have wanted to die with his boots on, and he did. He died doing what he loved, and that was rare indeed. These days I'm more vigilant than ever on the bike, but there's no place I feel closer to my dad. I think of him every time I throw my leg over the saddle. I think how much I learned from him, and how lucky I am to be his son. And a little editorial to add to that. A friend of mine, a year ago yesterday, was killed in a similar motorcycle accident, riding with his wife. She suffered serious injuries, but she survived. He survived two tours in the combat area in the Marine Corps. He was a true hero. Left two kids. Drama in real life. And it's a picture of a gentleman wearing a Santa Claus hat. Looks like he's probably in his 30s. And an attractive woman holding a drink and leaning up next to him, snuggling kind of. And the title to the article is, I Was Scammed by My Best Friend. She swindled me out of $92,000, forcing me into bankruptcy and destroying my once sunny outlook. But I finally got justice. I fell hard for one of the oldest cons in the book. But this scheme wasn't cooked up by some fictional Nigerian prince soliciting me through a sketchy email. I fell under the spell of an immensely lovable woman who inserted herself into my life and became my best friend. She was also an international con artist on the run. She shared me in an age-old con called the Inheritance Scam, ultimately bilking me out of nearly $100,000. She simultaneously destroyed my sense of self and darkened my once joyful outlook. As she was ruining my life, she was also scamming dozens of others around the world by impersonating psychic, mortgage brokers, psychologists, lawyers, and travel agents, and even pretending to be a cancer victim. She was a true queen of the con, using disguises and plastic surgery to alter her appearance. I was a reality TV producer working on shows such as American Ninja Warrior and Shark Tank. I never saw through her masterful performances. She might have gotten away with cheating many more people if she hadn't turned me into a vigilante. I started my own investigation, uncovered other victims, and helped bring her to justice. Today she's in jail, probably wondering how on earth she became the victim of one of her own victims. Allow me to explain. And there's a picture here of the gentleman with his husband. Apparently he is he's apparently homosexual, which is fine. And anyway, she's very attractive and leaning between the two of them. She introduced herself to me as Mayor Smith in May 2013 when she joined a group of angry neighbors in my living room to discuss what to do about losing access to our building's swimming pool because of a legal spat with a neighboring building. I can help, she told us. My boyfriend is a lawyer who can get the pool back. I liked her immediately. We all did. She was brash, funny, intelligent, and outspoken. Ironically, for someone who turned out to be a liar and a con artist, she came across as a woman who have always tell it like it is. She also came across as extremely wealthy. She wore expensive Jimmy Choo shoes and once showed me her closet filled with more than 250 pairs. I later discovered they were all fake. After our initial meeting in my apartment that night, May invited my husband Pablito and me to dinner. Over the next year, she frequently wined and dined us at fancy restaurants and always insisted on picking up the bill. I have a lot of money. Let me pay, she'd plead convincingly. We'd hang out almost every evening in our barbecue area, exchanging intimacies under the cool Los Angeles sky. May told us she was originally from Ireland. One night she pointed to a framed document hanging on her living room. This is the Irish Constitution, she said. See that signature at the bottom? That's my great uncle's. I had no idea, like her shoes, that tale was fake. Mayor bought me Irish tea and pastries and regaled me with stories of how, when she was a young girl, her grandmother, who was supposedly in the Irish Republican Army, would take her to the top of a bridge and teach her how to hurl Molotov cocktails down on British soldiers. I was captivated and horrified. When I tearfully confided in her that part of my family had disavowed me for being gay, she pronounced, "My family disowned me too." She said as she fought back tears, "They're trying to get me disinherited." May told me that an uncle, patriarch of her family, had recently died and her cousins were dividing up an estate worth 25 million euros, about $32 million. She said she was supposed to receive 5 million euros as her share of the inheritance and showed me angry text messages and emails from her cousins threatening that she wouldn't get a dime. NERP told me she had taken a lot of family money with her when she left Ireland many years ago, so she never needed to work. But she claimed she enjoyed working, so she got hired as a travel agency where her family did a lot of business. 14 months into our friendship, Mayor and I were like sister and brother, even into our phone calls with I love you. She told me that her barristers, if you had to look up the word to learn that means lawyers, were having trouble trying to secure her inheritance, and that they had warned her about a clause in her uncle's will saying that if any family members were convicted of a felony, that the person would forfeit his or her share. You better be careful, I cautioned her. One of your disgruntled companies might try and set you up. Many of her family members certainly appeared to hate her. Why wouldn't they set her up, I thought. On July 8, 2014, my phone rang. You have a collect call from an inmate at this Canterbury Regional Detention Facility. Press 1 to accept, the computerized voice instructed me. It was Mayor. I quickly pressed 1. You were right, she sobbed. I was arrested today. My family set me up to make it look like I stole $200,000 from my job. I told you this would happen, I yelled. I was distraught. I found a bail bondsman and paid him $4,200 to get her out of jail. That's when I first learned that her nigger lady was Mary Ann Smythe, not Mayor Smythe, and that she paid me back the next day when she was released from jail, or rather the married man she was dating at the time paid me back. Little did I, or he, know she was the one she was scamming him, too. As the month passed, Mayor showed me emails from her lawyers, assuring her that the case against her was falling apart. I had no idea those emails were from fake accounts she had created herself, just like the messages she claimed were from her cousins. Then, almost 3 years into our friendship, she told me that the district attorney processing her case had frozen her bank accounts, so I started lending her money. She had immediately paid back the $4,200 I used to bail her out of jail, so I felt confident she'd pay me back any other money I loaned her. But that's the thing. The term con artist is short for confidence artist, because these individuals are skilled at gaining over your confidence and then using it to scam you out of your money. Over the course of several months, I lent Mayor nearly $15,000. You'd think I'd be worried about giving her that much money, but I wasn't. Not only was it my best friend, but she also claimed she was about to inherit millions of dollars. I never even considered that anything sinister could be taking place. One day, Mayor called me and said the DA was demanding $50,000 to dismiss the case against her. I didn't have $50,000 in cash, but I did have an 840 credit score, so I let her charge $50,000 on my credit cards to get the criminal case against her dropped. A few months later, Mayor agreed, was arrested again. She said the judge discharged her with money laundering, something to do with using my credit cards, and punished her with 30 days in jail. A slap on the wrist, she assured me once again that as soon as she got out and received her inheritance, she would pay me back. Mayor called me to collect from jail every day. When I said I wanted to come visit her, she begged me not to. I don't want you to see me like this, she said, but I insisted. So I logged into the jail's website to schedule a visit. That's when the true devastation she had wrought on my life started to reveal itself. The website showed that Mayor was serving time for felony grand theft. This was no slap on the wrist. I took the day off and rushed to a Los Angeles courthouse. With trembling hands, I reviewed every record I could find from Mayor's case. I discovered she had lied to me about everything. I suddenly couldn't breathe. I learned that the $50,000 I let her charge on my credit cards had gone to pay $40,000 as part of a plea agreement to a felony grand theft charge she faced for stealing more than $200,000 from the travel agency she worked for. Had she not been able to come up with that $40,000, she would have received a 5-year sentence, not the measly 30 days she actually served. Her bank accounts had never been frozen. There was no wealthy Irish family or inheritance. She's not even Irish. These were all lies she used to entrap me. I went home and collapsed in my husband's arms. How could I have let this happen? I sobbed. Eventually, my pain was replaced by breathtaking anger and the determination to do something. The day Mary was released from jail, I confronted her in the parking lot outside our apartment building. She denied everything. That's not true, Jonathan. That's not true, she protested as tears streamed down her face. But I was done believing anything she had said. I balled up my fists, clenched my jaw, and walked away. We never spoke again. I went to the police days later in March 2017 and filed a report. The officer interviewed me, seemed skeptical there was anything they could do. Don't give strangers your money, were his parting words. So I started my own investigation. I dug up Mayor Smythe's high school yearbook and learned that she was born Mary Ann Andel in Maine and graduated from Bangor High in 1987. She moved to Tennessee, where, according to estranged family members I spoke with, she claimed she had breast cancer and allegedly scammed friends and neighbors of thousands for treatments. They told me that Mary was oddly obsessed with wanting to be Irish. In 2000, she went to Ireland on vacation. She ended up marrying a local and stayed for 9 years. In the same way that the wooden stakes kill vampires and silver bullets, hang on a second, my page just froze up. Sorry about this. Hang on a second. Okay. In the same way that wooden stakes kill vampires and silver bullets kill werewolves, publicity kills con artists. I began turning my pain into a profound sense of purpose. I started a blog, JonathanWalton.com, detailing how Merritt scammed me. Soon other victims of hers from all over the world started reaching out. I've heard from one who claimed Merritt had scammed her out of $10,000 by impersonating a psychologist. She allegedly tricked our landlord out of $12,000 in rent by pretending to have cancer. Merritt had iron deficiency anemia and would purposely avoid iron-rich foods so she could get admitted into hospitals for iron transfusions. While sitting in a hospital bed, she'd ask a nurse to take her picture and then email the photo to her victims to better sell her cancer story. She used this particular scam a lot. A police detective in Northern Ireland told me that authorities in Belfast had been looking for Marianne Smythe for years. The detective said she had worked as a mortgage broker in 2008 and had scammed many people and then vanished. All in all, Mary Smith used at least 23 different aliases and has been charged with fraud and grand theft in Florida and Tennessee. I was determined to get justice and called the Los Angeles Police Department every day. A year after I had last seen her, Mary was arrested and charged with grand theft for scamming me. She was released on her own recognizance. I never went near her, but 1 month before trial, Mara filed for a restraining order against me, asserting that I was threatening her with violence. It cost me $1,500 to hire an attorney to fight her bogus claim. If a judge grants this restraining order, you would be prevented from testifying against her at a criminal trial, my lawyer explained. Could this be her checkmate move? I wondered. I was apoplectic. Thankfully, the judge refused to grant the restraining order, and Mara's trial proceeded. The prosecution presented a mountain of irrefutable evidence. Though she was charged with scamming only me, the judge allowed testimony from three other victims to demonstrate a pattern. Mary did not testify in her own defense. As the witnesses described how she had scammed them, she just sat there with an emotional look on her face. That was probably her biggest tell to the jury. She was a brilliant actress while she was conning people, but remarkably, she didn't know how to act innocent. The only defense her attorney had was that I was making the whole story up. Supposedly, I persuaded all of the other witnesses, people I didn't even know before Mayer scammed me, to lie under oath. He was terrifyingly convincing. The prosecutor went over to an extreme detail each dollar Mayer had scammed from me. Reliving that experience in front of a room full of strangers ignited fury and embarrassment and regret in a new painful way. I spent 2 years pursuing Marianne Smith. I had to file for bankruptcy because of what she had done to me, and the 24 court appearances made even before the trial for continuances, pretrial motions, and hearings, meant I lost a lot of work and even more money. Not to mention the cost of this private investigators in multiple states and countries to ferret out all her scams. But it was worth it. On January 9, 2019, Marianne Smythe was found guilty of conning me out of $91,784, the money she had borrowed plus thousands of dollars of interest that had accrued on my credit cards. She was sentenced to 5 years behind bars. Besides me, only two of Mary's other marks reported to the police. That enabled her to continue scamming other people for years. Most of her victims, like most victims of any con artist, were too ashamed to tell anyone what had happened to them. I am now suspicious of everyone and everything. Making new friends is not something I'm good at anymore. I'm ashamed to. My desire to stop her from hurting other people is such stronger than my shame. Fast and the Furious. The speed limit is the maximum speed you can go by law and also basically the minimum speed you can go without ticking everybody else off. Story time is for everyone. Reading aloud, even to other adults, yields surprising results. Not long ago, Linda Kahn was sitting by a hospital bed in Houston feeling ill at ease. Beside her lay her 88-year-old father, whose heart was faltering. He needed surgery. What troubled her almost as much as his health was the fact that all day the two of them had engaged in nothing but depressing small talk. She and her father had always had good conversations, but now he seemed to think sunk in querulous contemplation of his predicament. He talked about the lousy hospital food and the test, the doctors, the diagnosis, the potential outcomes. The scope of this once wide-ranging interest seemed to have shrunk to the size of the room. "It is really hard to sit with a person in a hospital," Kahn says. "You feel like there's nothing to talk about except their medical situation." That day in the hospital, her eyes fell on a stack of books that other people had brought as gifts. Her father had always been a reader, but lately he didn't have the energy or the focus. She picked up Young Titan, Michael Sheldon's biography of Winston Churchill and started to read it out loud. Right away it changed the mood and atmosphere, she says. That afternoon, Claude read to her father for an hour. It was a relief and a pleasure for both of them. Reading gave the daughter a way to connect with her father and help him in a situation that was otherwise out of her hands. Listening allowed the father to travel on the sound of his daughter's voice, up and out of the solipsism of illness, and back into the realm of mature intellectual engagement, where he felt himself again. He's in and out of the hospital a lot now, Claude says, and I always read to him. That may be just what the doctor ordered. In a 2010 survey in the United Kingdom, elderly adults who joined weekly read-aloud groups reported better concentration, less agitation, and an improved ability to socialize. The survey authors attributed these improvements in large part to the rich, vivid, varied, non-prescriptive diet of serious literature that group members consumed, with fiction encouraging feelings of relaxation and calm, poetry fostering focused concentration, and narratives of all sorts giving rise to thoughts, feelings, and memories. The second-century Greek doctor Anatolius even prescribed daily recitation to his patients, recommending it as a kind of health-giving tonic and declaring that epic verse is the best to one's health. An epic poem might be a tall order, but in truth, almost any kind of reading to another person can be beneficial. That seems to be especially true for Alzheimer's patients, according to a 2017 University of Liverpool study of an 800,000 men and women with dementia. Reading a literary text together not only harnesses the power of reading as a cognitive process, it acts as a powerfully socially coalescing presence, allowing readers a sense of objective and shared experience at the same time, the study authors wrote. We are not the only species to benefit from this kind of oral medicine. Dogs do too, which is why, since 2014, volunteers at the American Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals have read to animals under the group's care. 10 or 15 years ago, I was essentially the only person who worked with the neglect and abuse cases, says Victoria Wells, the organization's senior manager for behavior and training. I used to sit with them in front of their kennels and play guitar and sing. I used to play the Beatles. I noticed that the dogs who were very fearful in the back of their kennels, shivering and cowering, would slowly creep forward to the front. They would appear to be listening and they would become very relaxed. The dog's response to music led in a natural way to the idea of reading aloud. It was a practical means of allowing a larger number of volunteers to minister to recovering animals. Some volunteers keep the animals apprised of current events by reading the newspaper. Some choose children's books and others prefer adult fiction. On the day I stopped by, a retired opera singer was reading the sci-fi thriller Logan's Run to half a dozen dogs. The dogs really enjoy their reading, Wells says. The fact that it's not threatening, but it's attention all the same, is what's most beneficial. We notice that it really does assist in the standard behavior treatment. The dogs are much more receptive to us, and they seem more comfortable in their kennels in general. I think it's that soothing, even tone of voice and the presence of somebody to keep them company that really, really benefits them. Readers get rewards, too. For Neil Bush, the late hospitalization of his famous spirits, George H.W. and Barbara Bush, became opportunities to repay a debt of gratitude. When I was a kid, my mother would read to me and my siblings, he told a reporter in the spring of 2018. With his parents in and out of care, he said, we've been reading books about Dad's foreign policy and more recently, Mom's memoir. Bush went on, his voice thick with emotion. And to read the story of their amazing life together has been a remarkable blessing to me, personally, as their son. Reading to a spouse, sibling, or parents might seem so far outside the normal range of most people's regular activities as to be eccentric and a little peculiar. Linda Kahn told me that right before she started to read the Churchill biography to her father, she was tempted to put the book down. It felt odd and even improper to presume to read to a man who, for her entire life, had always been strong and independent. She didn't want him to feel patronized. Her fear was misplaced. They both ended up loving the experience, like so many others who braved the momentary weirdness of reading to another adult. They were, to borrow a phrase from Wordsworth, surprised by the joy of it. Who wouldn't want that? One night years ago, a friend of mine wandered into his family's living room after supper, and picked up a copy of Michael Scherer's Civil War novel, The Killer Angels, read that. Without thinking much about it, he started to read the preface out loud. Immediately he was joined by his eldest son, who was about 12 at the time. A moment later his wife came in, followed by the couple's two young daughters, who at 6 and 8 were not perhaps the target audience for an introduction to Robert E. Lee and Joshua Chamberlain, but wanted to be part of a family moment. Within a few minutes, everyone seemed so comfy and engaged that my friend kept reading. It went on for an hour that night. He picked the book up again after dinner the next night, and the next, until he had finished it. How about a little word power? What do an academic, a debacle, and a Miami Beach clambake have in common? They are world sparrows with letters from only the first half of the alphabet, A to M, like those in this quiz. And the next issue will look at the second half of the alphabet. The first word is affable. Is it easygoing, humorless, or qualified? It's easygoing. Guillermo is always affable, even when facing big deadlines at work. Filial, ornamental, of sons and daughters, on horseback. Filial, of sons and daughters. If some filial respect is too much to ask around here, Mom joked. Edifice. Is that a steep cliff, an inspiration, or a large building? It's a large building. The Gothic edifice will be restored by a team of experts. Calcified. Hardened, wasted away, or rusted through. Hardened. Mary's political opinions only calcified as she grew older. How true that is. Malleable. Cruel, sickly, or pliable. Malleable. Pliable. After her first yoga class, Emily found that her muscles weren't all that malleable. Gaelic. Scottish, French, or Roman. French. Crepes are a classic Gaelic dish. Allege. Compare and contrast. Approach cautiously. Assert without proof. Assert without proof. At a time you allege my dog dug up your azaleas, he was actually at the vet. Fallible. Audible. Fertile. Imperfect. Fallible. Imperfect. The captain may think he's always right, but even his judgment is fallible sometimes. Kalimba. Tea service, thumb piano, or motor scooter. Kalimba. A thumb piano. My niece thought herself to play Mozart sonatas on the kalimba. Never heard that one. That's a word I'd never heard before. Blackball. Exclude socially, demand money, cancel without notice. Blackball. Exclude socially. EJ was blackballed from the gardening club after she missed 4 meetings in a row. Ebb. Rise slowly, decrease, or encourage. Ebb. Decrease. Tamika's enthusiasm for knitting began to ebb after she made a few misshapen scarves. Jackal. Wild dog, trickster, or thatched hut? A jackal is a wild dog. What is the mayor's office going to do about the pack of jackals on the loose in our town? Addled. Egg-shaped. Confused or extra. Addled is confused. Uncle Paul can get addled when he doesn't take his medications. Imam. Electronic message, atomic particle, Muslim prayer leader. It's a Muslim prayer leader. Local imams, rabbis, and priests formed a task force to promote religious tolerance. Fiddlehead. Edible fern, large crap, or a violinist. A fiddlehead is an edible fern. We're serving salmon on a bed of sautéed fiddleheads for lunch. Halftime notes. 3 different prefixes can signal the half. They're semi, as in semicircle, hemi, hemisphere, and demi, demigod. As it happens, all 3 prefixes occur in music, in one case in the same word. A hemi-demi-semi-quaver is the 64th note, or half of a half of a half of an eighth note, which is called a quaver. The shorter the note, the longer the name. I'm going to switch here, and we're going to go look at something from Consumer Reports, because that's what we normally do if we hadn't had that time off. Did you know you can save hundreds on your cable bills? Phone bills, streaming services, computers, and more with this advice from CR's experts, often without sacrificing any convenience or pleasure. And let's see what we've got here. Review your monthly fees. When confirmed by line after line of itemized charges on a bill, it's tempting to skip on the balance due and write a check. But doing a deeper dive can get big savings. For example, you might find a $15 per month charge on a cell phone bill for insurance on a phone that's now 4 years old. On a cable bill, it could be $12 a month for a DVR you no longer use now that you stream your favorite shows. Potential savings more than $100 per year for canceling just one unnecessary charge. And I actually had that happen to me, so I did actually cancel it and save a lot of money. Go all in on Amazon Prime. If you're paying $119 per year for free shipping, why not take advantage of the thousands of free movies and TV shows that come with it? Prime members also have access to free digital editions of select magazines, including National Geographic and Better Homes and Gardens, books and comic books, plus more than 2 million songs. Video Fare includes award-winning series like The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel and HBO classics such as The Sopranos, The Wire, Curb Your Enthusiasm, and Deadwood. Potential savings. There's enough to coax you into cutting HBO, Netflix, and other streaming services. You could save hundreds per year. Break up with Netflix. Netflix is an enormous general store of movies, TV shows, and usually popular original series like The Crown and Ozark. But if you can live without Her Majesty, you may be able to drop up this $9 to $16 per month streaming habit without feeling much pain. Disney costs just $7 per month and features Star Wars, Marvel, Nat Geo, and, of course, Disney content. Hulu offers heaps of shows with advertisements for $6 per month. Amazon Prime members get a hefty library of free video content, and there are loads of other free options. If you subscribe to Netflix because you're always subscribed to Netflix, it could be time to make a change. Buy your cables and dongles online. Some retailers will give you a deal on a TV or a laptop, then try to make it up part of the difference by selling you overpriced accessories. Need a high-speed HDMI cable for your new set? The store might try to sell you a 10-foot cable for $20 or more that you can buy at a site such as monoprice.com or Blue Jeans Cable for less than $10. Sign up with a low-cost cell service provider. A mobile virtual network operator, MVNO, is a relatively new form of cellular service that operates on the same networks used by AT&T, Verizon, and T-Mobile, but can offer cheaper plans because it doesn't have to build and maintain towers. How much cheaper? Straight Talk offers unlimited talk, text, and data for $55 per month. For the same service at AT&T, you pay $65. Visible has an unlimited plan for $40 per month. At Verizon, it's $70. CR members tend to give high marks to coverage supported by MVNOs. This helps explain why Consumer Cellular, Google Fi, and Ting routinely find atop our cell phone service ratings. MVNOs do have drawbacks. During peak demand, MVNO customers may experience slower service than those of AT&T, Verizon, and other major players. And very few MVNOs have physical location for in-person tech support. You can save up to $360 per year, however. Cut that cord once and for all. Deciding to cut the cord used to be simple. Most live TV streaming service was cheaper than cable. But now that live TV streaming providers have raised their prices, the math is trickier. Even so, cord cutting still makes sense for many, especially if you can use an antenna to get a free network content or are satisfied with limited TV streaming. Packages from companies such as Sling, which offers a limited selection of networks starting at $20 per month. Potential savings, easily $700 or more per year. 60 seconds tier without regrets. Go second tier without regrets. Top-of-the-line products rarely disappoint, but they do come with hefty prices. If you can live without the latest and greatest features, you can often find less expensive, excellent alternatives for the brands you trust. Here are a few smartphones that offer great value and performed well in our testing. Samsung Galaxy S10e, $600. This model falls just a point shy of the Galaxy S10 in overall score. So what are the sacrifices? Mostly the 2x zoom in the rear camera setup. But that doesn't mean you sacrifice image quality. It still rates very good. Most of the other features on this model measure up. Apple iPhone XR, $600. Only one point separates this model from the iPhone 11. What's the difference? Instead of the fancy OLED screen found on the iPhone 11, the XR uses a traditional LCD screen. Even so, the model still earns an excellent rating for display quality. Samsung Galaxy A350. Though it logs a full 10 points behind the S10 in our ratings, it's also significantly cheaper and still nets a very good overall score. The main difference? The A50's cameras are just okay. So if you're not addicted to Instagram, this might be a stellar money-saving choice. Spruce up your phone. In an age when a brand new phone can cost $800 or more, it's tempting to hold onto the model you have for as long as you can. One way to extend the life of your phone, replace the battery, which often fails to hold a full charge after about 2 years. At the Apple Store, the out-of-warranty cost for the repair is $69 for newer models, the iPhone X and later, and $40 for earlier versions. Best Buy's Geek Squad will provide the service for Galaxy models from the Note 5 to the Note 9 for $60. Toss in a shiny new phone case, and you're still saving yourself a chunk of money by waiting another year to upgrade. Buy refurbished. Apple, Dell, and Samsung all sell refurbished laptops, smartphones, and tablets. Buying one is a great way to save money. On Apple's website, for example, you can purchase a refurbished iPhone X for $599. A new iPhone X costs $899. Interested in headphones or speakers? Bose and Sonos also have programs. According to a 2018 survey, 82% of more than 3,000 CR members with a refurbished smartphone said they were highly satisfied with it. But before you begin, do a little homework. Look for products that are certified pre-owned. Make sure the refurbishment includes a new rechargeable battery and all of the standard accessories. Insist on a warranty. Without one, you have no protection. Ask about the return policy. Some problems take time to surface, so it's best to buy from a retailer that gives you at least a month to return the product. CR research shows that members who purchase extended warranties and service contracts for laptops rarely use them for repairs. Not only that, but the median cost of extra coverage is about the same as the median cost of a single repair. The survey results for desktop, tablets, and very similar bottom line. If you happen to have drop in your phone, it might make some sense to spring for the added protection. Otherwise, put the money into your savings account just in case you need it. The stats say you'll probably get to keep it. Embrace the 30-day trial. Amazon Prime, Disney, Netflix, and Spotify Premium are just a handful of the services that offer free trial periods. Some are only 7 days, but you get the idea. Taking advantage of these is a good way to decide whether a service is worth paying for. But if you're strategic, you can use a free trial period to, say, entertain visiting grandkids, save a big on Amazon Prime Day, or catch the Tour de France. Be sure to mark your calendar so that you don't forget to cancel the service before you have to start paying for it. Stop renting your router. Instead of paying $5 to $10 per month to lease a router from your cable company, consider buying one. You'll find options that practically pay for themselves in a year's time. The OnHub AC1900 from Google and Asus, for example, sells for $85. If you have a modest-sized home, choose the TP-Link Archer C7, which costs only $60. Potential savings are up to $120 per year. Shop at the right time. The holiday deal season in November and December is generally the best time to shop for electronics, but you don't have to wait until year's end to get a good deal. Here are the other times you can save based on a CR analysis of pricing data. January, sound bars and TVs. February, smartphones and tablets. March, cameras. May, portable Bluetooth speakers, camcorders, and smartwatches. July, home security cameras. August, Chromebooks, desktops, headphones, laptops, and printers. Potential savings, 25% off the more or more off regular prices. Buy a phone case. Dropping an unprotected phone can be a costly fumble. The out-of-warranty cost to replace cracked screen on the iPhone 11 Pro Max is $329. For an iPhone X, it's $279. And Best Buy screen replacement service for Samsung phones starts at $200. Inexpensive cases are available for less than $20. And CR's testing shows that even a flimsy case can confer enough protection to keep a screen from cracking in many instances. Use an indoor antenna. Chances are good that you can get dozens of over-the-air channels using an indoor TV antenna. In a recent CR test of antennas, the Mohu RealLeaf comes out on top. It costs about $30, much less than a single month of basic cable. The number of channels you'll be able to receive depends largely on where you live. To find out how many channels an antenna in your home is likely to pick up, any or address at the Federal Communications Commission's DTV Reception Maps website, fcc.gov/media/engineering/DTV Maps. Be sure to buy a model from a retailer with a liberal return policy, just in case. Last, placing the antenna close to a window and higher up tends to optimize reception. And on a totally different subject, is there a risk of COVID-19 exposure from bringing groceries into my house? The risk of becoming infected with the novel coronavirus from your groceries, whether you pick them up yourself or have them delivered, is considered low if you practice good hygiene when handling them, says James E. Rogers, CR's Director of Food Safety Research and Testing. This means washing your hands at least 20 seconds with soap and water after putting away all packaging, including porous containers such as paper boxes and bags. Then, after opening the containers, wash your hands again before preparing any food. But if you use a pasta box a few days after you get it, there is little likelihood that the virus could still live on the box and cause an infection. A scientist in Germany who has studied long-term coronaviruses live on different surfaces. Still, it can't hurt to wipe down non-porous grocery containers, plastic, glass, and metal, with disinfectant wipes before putting them away. The good news, there's no current evidence of food-to-person transfer of the virus, whether food is cooked or raw. Still, it's a good idea to rinse fruits and vegetables to help remove adherent dirt and possible pesticides. Scrub hard-skinned produce, such as potatoes and apples, with a soft brush and vegetable brush under plain running water. To reduce the level of harmful bacteria, such as E. coli, on leafy greens, soak them in vinegar or vinegar water solution for 10 to 15 minutes, then rinse thoroughly. And let's close out with some laugh lines. The most judgmental aquatic animal is probably the seal of disapproval. People freak out because of sharks in the ocean. Newsflash, that's where they live. If you see them at Chipotle, then we have a problem. I'm jealous of turtles. They can go home whenever they want. Lobsters would be proud of themselves if they knew how expensive they were. I've never been more disappointed than when I found out the Miami Dolphins football team was made up entirely of people. Hermit crab describes me twice. And with that, we've just about run out of time for today's episode of Reader's Digest and a little bit of Consumer Reports. Be sure to listen in next time. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. I'm Jim Cronin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. So long until next time, and thanks so much for listening.